So Tori, tell me about your spark and hustle. What's all that about?
So I am running a series of small business conferences for both current and aspiring small business owners. They're geared toward women, but interestingly, at every event, we always have a few men, and they wind up having the best time because they're surrounded by all these women, and it's especially valuable for them if they are doing business with women, if that's their target market. Been all over the country, and it's a three-day program that is all about the hustle in starting or growing a small business. So all of these women come to us with this amazing, what we call spark, which is their idea, their passion, their expertise, their something. But what they often need a lot of help with is, so how do I make money doing this? Or how do I make more money doing this? And that's really all about the hustle. So it's 3 days devoted to largely the branding, marketing, and sales aspects of making more money. So we can't make you a better graphic designer or a better cupcake maker, but we can help you to make more money performing those services or producing that product.
That's excellent. Tori, we're going to give people the website, which is sparkandhustle.com.
You know, what's interesting to me is, as I've talked to, I've gotten to know a lot of people in each of the cities where we've held the events. And one of the interesting things for me is seeing the differences in sort of how people connect with the event in advance. And when I dig deep with people to say, talk to me about, you know, where the resistance is coming from, what I often find is that events are a dime a dozen for entrepreneurs. And many of them are free or low cost. This sense of feeling burned that they attend an event and then it's really just a, you know, thinly veiled or not so thinly veiled sales presentation.
Right.
So we get you under the tent so that we can sell you our expensive products and services. And one of the policies that we have over the 3 days at our event is there is no selling from the stage. There is no selling that goes on. We view the event as the solution. You're buying the solution by attending the event.
Well, you know, Tori, the key thing is cheap isn't better. Better's better.
Yeah.
And so we need them to recognize that. And you know, I can tell you from personal experience, I started my business back in 1997, and I would love to have had a conference like this to go to figure out all the things you're talking about, because I was passionate about providing financial planning. But all the things that you cover in your conference, the stuff I'm like, I had to learn.
Exactly. And frankly, same for me. I started my business 12 years ago. My core business is Women for Hire, and we produce career fairs throughout the country. And I remember, you know, when I started, there probably were all kinds of resources that I just, for whatever reason, didn't take advantage of, and I figured it out as I went along. And so, and along the way, did a pretty good job on my own, built a multi-million dollar company, and now I'm taking sort of all of those growing pains and the challenges and the triumphs and bottling it in these 3 days. And I can't tell you just how fabulous the response has been. You know, anybody can do a search on Facebook or Twitter and just see some of the feedback if they're, you know, considering attending.
So, Tori, this is not, you know, like a let's open up the textbook to page 45 and we're going to talk.
Oh,
I mean,
no way.
This is this stuff. You know, I've threatened. My book is Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and I've threatened to write a couple of follow-up books, and one of them is something like, you know, 101 things they don't teach you in business school. It sounds like that's what you're doing with your conference.
That's exactly right, and it's so interesting that you mentioned business school, because so many of the speakers that we had, we were just in Chicago a few weeks ago, and one of our speakers there was the co-founder of Vera Bradley. So she was saying how when she started her company almost 29 years ago, it was Barbara and one of her best friends, and they decided that women didn't have nice luggage, and so they each borrowed $250 from their husbands and bought fabric and just started sewing bags and selling them, and they would fund their growth through sales. And she said that her the current CEO is her son-in-law, who went to, I think, Harvard Business School, and cringes all the time at sort of, you know, how they started and how they went along. And there was no plan other than, let's make bags and sell them. Let's sell a lot of bags. Like, that was the plan. And so she joked about having, you know, no formal training whatsoever in terms of getting the business going, and has done pretty darn well. The company went public last October and is, you know, I don't think you can go anywhere without seeing Vera Bradley bags. And so
I have them at my house. We need to take a quick break.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
You know, the thing, Tori, I wanted to get to quickly, because I know that one of the things that people run into a lot with business is the cash. And from my experience and also in working with other people, it always seems to take twice as long and take twice as much cash. So can we talk a little bit about what you've seen or what you recommend for people? You know, a lot of people are still out of work or they're having a hard time finding a job. Is this the time for them to start their own business? And how do they do that? How do they get the funding? What do you tell them to do about that?
Sure. So the first is, I would say, you know, let's be realistic about what you want to start. So maybe the dream is I want to open up a bakery. Well, obviously that takes a whole lot of money. There's, you know, very few ways that we can completely cut corners to do it on a shoestring budget of, you know, a few hundred dollars, for example. So maybe that's not the first thing you can do. Maybe you need to instead find space in a commercial kitchen, which perhaps if you can't afford, maybe you go to a church and you ask to use the church's commercial kitchen during off hours when nobody's in there. And maybe you pay nothing or you pay very little bit of money and you create your brownies or cupcakes or whatever baked goods it is you're going to specialize in. And you go about selling them that way, you know, without having a brick and mortar business at first. So there are ways that you can get going right now that don't have to cost a lot of money if you are creative. And so what I suggest is, like, strip it back to, like, the most basic. Like, let's strip it down to, you know, what is the bare bones thing that I could get away with to launch this business right now? Because I think a lot of times it's really easy to say, oh, well, I guess no money, you know, I can't do it. You know, no money is just an easy excuse, just like a lot of people use no time as an excuse. And, you know, we know that when we really want to make something happen, like, we find a way. We really and truly find a way. So that's the first thing I would say, like, strip it down to the basics. Then one other thing I would suggest is something that I've been a real big fan of lately, and that is crowdfunding. And crowdfunding is a way to raise money from multiple sources instead of just one. So typically when we think about funding our small business, we go to one source. We get a bank loan. We go to an investor. We go to that rich uncle to write a check for us. But if we don't qualify for a bank loan or don't know the investment community and frankly probably wouldn't be attractive to the investment community and we don't have that rich uncle, crowdfunding is a way to really leverage your social network connections. So let's say you have a whole lot of friends on Facebook or you know a lot of people. Instead of going to one person to give you $5,000, maybe you go to all of those people and ask them for small contributions. And the interesting thing is the way this works is it's not an investment. It is not a loan. It's really just a straight donation contribution. Someone's doing it because maybe there's a perk you're going to offer them, or maybe it's just that I love what you're doing. I want to kind of experience your success vicariously. And, hey, you know what? Here's $20. Like, good luck with your cause. And when you get enough people giving you that $20, $50, $5, $300, whatever the amount is, suddenly you realize you can get the money you need to go make it happen. And I've helped a lot of people with very successful crowdfunding campaigns. The two biggest websites to administer your campaign are Indiegogo.com and Kickstarter.com. And I've helped so many women in the last 6 months to really overcome and cross the bridge between, like, $0, I absolutely can't do it, to I need $5,000 and I'm in business. And crowdfunding has been an incredible way to do that.
So, Tori, what you're really doing, I guess, is asking these people to help fund your passion. so that you can get it going, and then they can, they, like you said, they can vicariously enjoy and support what you're doing, and you can really ramp up a business quickly that way.
Absolutely. And there are so many people, like, if you think about it, you know what, you know, there's plenty of times when we waste money on all sorts of stuff, like for less than the cost of, you know, going out to dinner. If somebody you knew and you really believed in said, hey, you know what, I'm doing this, I'm building all this momentum, and I need, you know, a small contribution from you, would you consider doing this? And you can name your amount. You know, if you really believed in that person and you believed in the idea that they outlined, you know, maybe you would say, sure, you know what, here's $30. I want to be part of this thing. I want to be one of several people who are going to help you make it happen. And we're seeing that. We're seeing the power of social networks in terms of helping people raise money for their businesses. And I think that that's going to get, it's going to be something that we talk about like a household, you know, common conversation, you know, probably a year from now. And so, yet it's alive and well, and it's something that a lot of people are already doing. And they're raising a lot of money this way. Millions of dollars every month are being raised this way. And yet, even though it's not something that's mainstream that everybody's talking about yet, it's happening. And you can tap into that right now.
We need all the small business we can get. We were reading a statistic before we had you join the show today about, you know, the small business is the backbone of America. You know, over half the jobs come from small business. And so any opportunities for people to be able to start, they get the funding, as you've talked about, with the crowd financing. Next up is the hustle part, you know, which I think a lot of people do not, you know, it's one thing, and it's, of course, a fabulous thing to have that passion for starting a business. But the hustle part is where really, that's why I love your website, the spark and the hustle. You got to have that spark, but
yeah,
you've got to be prepared to work and not just be passionate about this dreamy thing. You've got to put the wheels on the pavement and, you know, help our listeners understand what that's about and how your conference can help people understand what they need to do to make the hustle part work.
Sure. So it's so true that without the hustle, like, it doesn't matter how great your idea is, it doesn't matter how passionate you are, like, if you're not, you know, hustling, you're not making money from that. And so, you know, then it's just yet another idea that's out there. And so the hustle is really about the decisions you have to make each and every day and the steps and actions you have to take toward fulfilling and living those specific decisions. So, for example, you know, everybody sort of knows how to use Facebook to connect with, you know, old classmates and follow up on watch what our kids are doing. And yet, do we know how to use Facebook to really leverage it for our business success? We really dive into how to use social media for our business success. We talk about how to do your own public relations to be able to attract buzz and ultimately clients for your business. Instead of marketing that you have to pay a gazillion dollars for, we talk about muscle marketing, which is, you know, using some old elbow grease to form collaborations and partnerships to develop new revenue streams and to develop complementary opportunities with other successful business owners. There's a woman who we worked with recently who was a very successful yoga instructor but moved to a new community to be closer to her parents who were sick and needed to be with them. And so she basically lost her entire clientele. It wasn't a business that she could keep those clients if she was relocating. And so she very quickly needed to get a new client base without a lot of time, without any money. And so we helped her to partner with a really successful, hot salon and spa that was in town where they had a very rich client base, a deep client base. And she came in, offered some complimentary programs, and just by, it was benefit by association. We talk about guilt by association, but the opposite is true, which is benefit by association. That's muscle marketing. That's not something that cost $1, but it's a smart marketing mechanism that helped her build a client base really quickly. We have so many success stories of very simple things that people can do to get their business moving. And so we don't bring everybody together to say, okay, if you spend $3,000 on this and $400 on that, then finally you might be lucky enough to attract a client base. Like, the hustle is really about using that elbow grease. It's about making things happen that where you can't just write a check or you can't just turn over your Amex card. It's, you've got to actually put in the time, put in the effort to do the work. We talk a lot about sales, and it's one area where, you know, so many women cringe. We'd rather focus on, you know, doing our business rather than having to sell and ask for money. And so we go through a lot of exercises to, okay, how do we figure out how to sell successfully without feeling, you know, in any way uncomfortable or sleazy? What do we do when people say no? You know, many times we're afraid to ask for the sale. We hint around it, but we don't ask for it. And so how do we ask for it, and what do we dare do if somebody says no? You know, what happens then? How can we turn the no into a maybe, into a yes? Overcoming sales objections is a big piece of it. So it's very interactive. It's very engaging. It's based on real world right now solutions. There's no theory. There's no textbooks. There's no, I learned this in business school. It's all about, like, here's what I've done. Here's what works. Here's what all of my speakers have done. Here's what works. And it's also, I think one of the interesting things is there's a lot of candor among all of the women who will say, you know what, I tried this and, like, it was a bust and it didn't work, and I had really high hopes for this particular method or this particular program or this particular marketing campaign, and it was a huge bust. It didn't work, and here's what I learned from it. And so there's a lot of exposure around mistakes and learning from mistakes. So you don't just feel like, oh, wow, I'm hearing from all these successful people. Like, I could never dare to be as successful as they were. Like, we reveal the bruises and bumps and scratches and scrapes and headaches along the path. And I think that's very revealing and comforting to people to realize, okay, there's going to be some rough patches, but ultimately I can succeed.
Well, if you're going to hustle, you better expect to get scratched and bumped and hit on the head. Now, all of what you're talking about, which really hits, you know, I think another question we want to get to, and if you can hang on after the break, I'd love to talk a little bit about the whole role of a business plan.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
Tori, when I started my business in 97, and I'm sure you have a similar tale, is, you know, there's all these things that you don't necessarily know that you have to learn along the way, and you're like, boy, I really wish or somebody had helped me formulate a business plan so that I take all these different things that you know, I'm learning, that I encapsulate that into a plan so that when things go right, I follow the plan, and when things don't go so right, I stick to my plan and of course have to make adjustments as I go along, which is, you know, the adaptability of any good business plan. So if we can speak a little bit to how that works and what people can do when they go to your conference to kind of walk away with a better direction on how to build their plan, not just have that spark, but how to put together the method that goes with all this.
Sure. So I think one of the first things that's important, even before someone sits down to put pen to paper, is really understanding their why. So asking the question, what's my why? Why am I doing this? And the why can't just be about, like, amassing boatloads of cash. So the why is not about money, but why do we want that money? Why do we want to be able to build this business? Is it, you know, because we want to have the flexibility to be there for our family? Is it because the pain of the pink slip has been so severe in our family and we're so determined to forge our own path and be our own boss and become immune to the pink slip? Is it because we need to really be able to increase our earning power to pay for medical treatments for a loved one? You know, what is the why? And the why is so critical, because when the going gets tough, which it will, you will not be tempted to throw in the towel, because that why still exists and it's still burning and it's still a necessity, and that's really what drives you. And so understanding the why is really the first step, and embracing it. And I say that because it's not just about replacing your income, because there's too many people who I've seen who say, all right, I can't get a job, I guess I'll just start a business, sort of as if that's like a simple alternative. And it's not a simple alternative. And it really takes, you know, the dedication and the commitment and recognizing that it is an alternative, but it's not just, oh, well, can't get a job, I'll just do this. Like, it's a much bigger commitment.
It's not something to resign to.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So the why. Then from there are a few key elements that your business plan should be able to address. What's my what? So what is this business? What exactly is it? If you can't explain it in a sentence, we have trouble. There's a lot of people who, I remember actually at one of our events in the past few months, overhearing a conversation where somebody said, I don't mean to be rude, but I've been talking to you for 10 minutes and I still don't really get what you do. And so people need to be able to get what you do quickly. It shouldn't take 4 pages for you to explain what you do. Like, explain it in a sentence. What's the what? What exactly does your business do? What's the who? Who does your business serve? And this is really important, and it's a lot of times harder than people think. So, we take a classic example, like somebody who manufactures a new line of skin cream, and she says, well, skin cream, anybody can use skin cream, so everybody with skin is, that's my client base. That's my target market. And that's really not true, because the ingredients, the packaging, the pricing, all of that is going to determine, your who. Is this a product that's going to be sold in dermatologists' offices? Is this going into Walmart? That determines part of your who. And so the more specific you can define who you are targeting, the easier it will be for you to go after that particular person. So when we think we go after the masses, our message gets lost. Our message, it never catches on. So we have to be really clear about who exactly our business is targeting. What do you know about them, both in terms of demographics, also in terms of psychographics? What are these people like? What makes them tick? What ticks them off? Where are you going to find these people? Where do they hang out online? What kind of groups do they belong to offline? Why would they be inclined to buy this particular product? So really being clear about your target market. What's my how much? How much, this is like the money question. How much is it going to cost me to deliver this particular product or service? How much can I charge for it? And many times we underestimate how much it will cost to deliver the product or service, because we think only about the direct costs, and we don't think enough about the overhead and all of the unexpected costs that can potentially come up. So you really need to do that financial analysis. Again, this isn't like a 14-page spreadsheet, but you really have to sort of crunch your numbers so that you're super clear that you're covering all of your costs, and then you're also realizing a healthy profit margin. And at the end of the day, that tells you how much you're going to have to charge for this particular product. Is that out of line? I've had people kind of come up with these calculations, and they discover that they're going to have to charge, $30 for a brownie. Like, that's not going to fly.
That's an expensive brownie.
Yeah, exactly. Diamond, instead of chocolate chips. And so it means that you're going to have to sell many more in order to decrease that cost per item. So really, assessing what your numbers are and making sure that at the end of the day you're coming up with, a product that is, rightly or service that is rightly priced based on what the market can bear. And, other times people have calculated the numbers and they've determined that, okay, to sell my $5 bar of soap, in order to do it at that price, I'm going to have to, sell a gazillion bars of soap. Well, probably right off the bat, that's not realistic for you. And so, do some kind of playing around with it. And one thing I would caution against is focus on your numbers right now. Don't spend your time forecasting what you're going to sell 5 years from now, because if you were that good at projecting numbers that far out, like, I wouldn't advise you to just buy the winning lottery ticket, Well, I'm always, fascinated when people are saying, and in year 7, we're going to gross, $14 million. And I'm like, really? Like, you've never sold one thing yet to date. How are you projecting, that kind of money that far out? So focus on the right now numbers. Like, what is right now? And then the last step, which is probably among the most important, is really like, okay, how are we going to make this all happen? Like, what's the hustle? What is our marketing strategy? How are we going to reach our target market? We've been very clear about our who and our what. We're very clear about our how much. Now, how are we going to go out there and communicate this? How are we going to go out there and target this and sell it and market it? And all of this stuff you could do in one piece of paper. Like, this doesn't have to be this comprehensive document that keeps you tied up. When I hear people telling me things like, I've been working on my business plan for 8 months and, I'm still working away. Like, to me, that gets into stalling, not
totally.
Planning.
Totally.
You've got to just, get out there and start doing it, because the reality is business plans are not concrete documents. Like, nothing's
They're a start.
Locked.
They're not a finish. They're a start.
That's right. And they have to be very fluid, and you're going to adjust based on
what happens
what happens
on the ground.
That's right. When I started my business, I thought for Women for Hire 12 years ago that my target market was going to be college seniors. And what I very, very quickly realized was that college seniors became a small part of my market, and the mothers and sisters and grandmothers and aunts and friends of those college seniors were much more of my market. So professional women, more so than those just launching their careers, became a bigger chunk of my market. And so I had to just readjust my marketing and my services to accommodate that audience that was really clinging to the service that I was offering. And it worked because I was, fluid and receptive to that. And so you've got to be receptive to, you know, who responds best to your product and service. And sometimes, you know, our best intentions, we'll face a little bit of challenge and change, and that's okay.
Tori, let me, one of the things I think that's really interesting about your, you know, who, what, how much, and that process, one of the things we also, I think, and I'm sure you would agree with this, we've got to be thinking about, in those things, what makes our product or our service unique, really refining that, because as you well know, there are just so many choices out there in the marketplace. What makes you unique?
Absolutely. I think it's important to address that, but not to get so bogged down by that you decide that you're not going to move forward, because competition doesn't have to be scary. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. And in fact, I would probably say that most of us don't reinvent the wheel. We just have to do what we do really, really well.
And that might be what's unique, is just doing something really well.
Exactly. You know, on the block where I live in New York City, there's three places you can buy coffee on the same block. There's a Starbucks, there's a diner, and then there's a little cute independent coffee shop called Joe's. And all three do exceptionally well selling coffee, because they each, and probably, it's the same coffee. It's packaged differently. The customer service is differently. The vibe is different. But at the end of the day, they're all selling coffee. And they're probably
still not working on their business plan. They're actually out there hustling and making it work.
Exactly. And so focus on, just doing what you do really, really well. And the other thing that I would also say is many, many times as a startup, as an emerging small business owner, we have to sell ourselves before we can sell our product or service. So, the customer service that you offer, the way that you are approaching people, the way you're marketing yourself by, being active in your community, being active among your core audience that you want to target, letting people shake your hand, really getting out from behind your computer, or if your business is something that's online and it truly is behind the computer, creating videos that showcase who you are, because many times we buy from people that we really, really like, and unless you're starting, the next Target or Walmart or, some big giant where the face-to-face isn't as relevant, most of us, have to rely on selling ourselves and making people like us and want to do business with us before they'll actually give us their money.
Well, speaking of selling ourselves, we need to take another quick break. If you want to hang on, we can just close the show with you. We got a few
Sounds
minutes
good.
Here. All right, hold
no
on.
Problem.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
The thing that I've seen, Tori, and I think that people, when you start out a business, and again, somebody maybe they've lost their job, or they want to walk the plank, so to speak, and go out into this, this world of entrepreneurship, that there's so many things that you just don't know, and your accountant can't necessarily tell you, or that your stockbroker can't necessarily tell you, that you've got to learn, and the surefire fastest way is to leverage these experiences. And of course, a big part of experiences is the mistakes that people make. So you shared earlier in the show that there's a real candor about, here are the things that you don't want to do, as well as the things that you do want to get right, but the things you don't want to get wrong.
Exactly. And I think that's, one of the things that's special about the Spark and Hustle events is that there's a real openness where everybody is willing to, share exactly, what's gone wrong and some of the things that they've tried that have been a bust. And so you learn not only, you know, what to do, but what not to do, not from theory, not from a textbook, but from real experience.
Well, you've pretty much encapsulated what our show's about. Real problems, real solutions, real money with David Holland. But
all right,
that went fast because we were hustling.
Good. All right. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Tori.
Appreciate it.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter @RealMoneyRadio.